The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
Welcome all here as well as at home online. I'm Venerable Nivato, and I'm very pleased to be able to give my first talk here on a topic that I have chosen. Sri Jutha mentioned, I've been a monk for 5 years now, five vasas as a bhikkhu, a fully ordained monk. And so it's a privilege for me to give this Dhamma sharing in order to practice generosity, practice dana, and pass on the teachings of the Buddha and my application of the Dhamma in order to resolve my anxiety. But I'm not a conventional monk. For me to relax, I'd like to play a few word games first. And also I'd like to try to make your hearts lighter, because anxiety can be quite a challenging issue for some of us. So for me to be lighthearted, I'd like to say the following few wordplay games. What sits at the bottom of the ocean and twitches? A nervous wreck. This is a conversation between a couple of friends, Peter and Paul. Peter said, "Oh, tonight I'm going to go and listen to a faith healer." Paul asked, "Oh, Peter, where is this faith healer teaching?" And Peter mentioned the name of a certain hall. Paul says, "Don't go there. She's no good. She's so boring." In the audience at the front, when I went, there was a lady in a wheelchair. Because the faith healer was so boring, so bogus, this lady in the wheelchair walked out after 1 minute. What do you call a parade of rabbits hopping backwards? A receding hairline. I can tease people who are bored, because I became bored when I was in my early 20s because of anxiety. After studying a couple of years doing a business course, majoring in accounting, I was offered a position to work for 1 year for work experience, basically. So in the course, basically, you do 2 years of your degree, and then 1 year work experience, and you complete your final year, basically, after the year work experience. So 4 year degree, if you include the 1 year work experience. So I was accepted into a large accounting firm, because I very diligently sent an excellent application, and I rehearsed what I was going to answers I would give to the predicted interview questions. I did so well that they offered me the job, but I didn't want it. So I went to see the university counselor. I can't remember what recommendation, what suggestion she suggested, but it didn't seem to help. I didn't want the job, but I decided to take it anyway. And so after completing 2 years of my business degree in management accounting, I worked for 1 year as an audit trainee. And I experienced so much anxiety. And I remember every evening, every night sleeping basically, I would get heart palpitations. And as a result, most nights I wasn't able to sleep basically during the week. And at work, because I was comparing myself to the other people in work experience and to the graduates as well. And because of how I've been since I've been in this world, basically, I haven't had much confidence in myself since I was a teenager. And so basically, when I was doing that work experience year, I had so much anxiety because I feared that I'd be fired and that'd be a disgrace. So after that year ended, basically, I survived. And surprisingly, I didn't have a heart attack. But I started noticing, to my grief, that I started losing my hair when I was completing my final year at uni. And that was another big issue for me as well, losing my hair. Yeah, that caused more anxiety as well. And also remember when I was maybe around in my early 30s, I went out on a date, and my date asked me, "Oh, why are you sitting there with clenched fists?" I even didn't notice. I wasn't angry. This was just who I was at the time, basically. I was a very uptight, edgy, nervous person. That's why I was clenching my fists, because my body was very tight, because my mind was very tight. As a child, I remember I was a very shy child. And I was relatively quiet. I wasn't a troublemaker. I loved nature. Since my teenage years, I've been dealing with anxiety on and off. And not really knowing how to deal with it, basically. So I did the best that I could. And even when I joined Newbury Monastery in 2016 as an Anagarika, I carry the anxiety with me. I encountered Ajahn Brahm's way of teaching. So I'm sure some of you will have heard this this story. So imagine coming home from work, or if not working, then from going out and return to your home, and in your outside your house, in the front yard, in the garden, a huge pile of manure has been dumped there. No one knows who has actually put the poo there, the shit, the manure. It is so smelly. So, you have two choices. You either complain, or you do something about the pile of shit. If you could choose to complain, and you take that poo around with you everywhere, you put it in your pockets, in your bag, up your shirt sleeves, and complain to people about that pile of dung. After a while, including your friends, they will avoid you. So you decide to go to the garage, get the wheelbarrow, the fork, and the shovel. You wheel it out to the front yard, and you start shoveling the shit, the dung, the manure, into the wheelbarrow. And you take it to the front garden where the flowers are growing. You wheel the rest of the wheelbarrow to the back, and you dig the shit into the garden at the front and the veggies and the trees at the back. Day by day, you shovel manure into the wheelbarrow. Some days you only manage half a wheelbarrow. Other days, one, two, or three. You continue to dig the poo into the garden at the front and the back. You notice that you're feeling lighter. You also notice that the flowers in the garden are beautiful. So many colors, so many scents. And in the backyard, the fruit trees are thriving, laden with fruit. So, the pile of dung, the manure, stands for anything in life that we call a problem. So for me, it was anxiety. That was my major problem, and is still a problem. So, my pile of dung in my front yard is still there, but it's manageable. So I will continue to shovel, poo into the wheelbarrow, and dig into the garden of my heart in order to work with anxiety. And in the story, which is in Ajahn Brahm's book, Opening Door of Your Heart, in America, it's called A Truckload of Dung. So in the story, Ajahn Brahm describes that you can share the flowers and the fruit with passers-by, with your family, with your friends, your neighbors, even strangers. So that's why tonight I'm sharing my experience and what I've learned from my experience, the fruits of my practice in working, befriending anxiety. And by doing so, I've given myself a bit of confidence to work through a difficult problem for me. But I don't call it a problem anymore. Things that come my way that are challenging, I call them challenges these days. So anxiety can still be challenging for me at times. And one sure way to befriend anxiety is to continue to laugh at oneself and to be lighthearted. And with that, what do you call a woman who sets fire to all her bills? Bernadette. And what do you call a shaking Tyrannosaurus? A nervous Rex. I learned this way from Ajahn Brahm. If you want to teach people Dharma, you need to open their hearts first. And when they laugh, that's when you can drop in a teaching of Dharma. So one of the most effective ways in working with anxiety, so I'll actually describe anxiety briefly. So I'll define it in very simple terms, basically. Anxiety is worrying about an event in the future. So anxiety is worrying about an event that may or may not happen. And usually this event will not happen, basically. But we fear that something's going wrong in the future, especially with a certain event, basically, that's important to us. A small one or large one, doesn't matter. It could be a very small one. Just basically being somewhere on time, basically. Yeah, and worrying that you're going to be late. So it's a fear of an event in the future, basically. And it is, anxiety is an emotion. Anxiety is an emotion related to fear. I read up the definition in Wikipedia today, and it says fear is about a real fear, whereas a real fear that's happening now, basically, an event that's happening now, whereas anxiety is about an event in the future. In my case, with anxiety, there comes a lot of thoughts. So in the past, I was an incessant thinker, and sometimes I still am, basically. So think constantly, basically. So that's why those who suffer anxiety, I'm not sure about other people, but sometimes my sleep is not very sound as a result, because I'm worrying. And I found recently that the best way, so whenever basically you've got anxiety, I feel it in my belly. It's a tightening of the belly, a knot in the belly, a hardening in the belly. So I've learned basically just ground myself in my belly. Go straight to the belly, basically, whenever there's anxiety, and just watch the sensation there. Thoughts create emotions. So thoughts about things going wrong in the future will create anxiety. And for me, it manifests in the belly. If it's of moderate to severe level. So whenever there's anxiety, I go straight to the belly and just observe it. And if I'm patient, I find that the belly does soften. And along with that, the emotion of anxiety. And even if there's no sensation in the belly, but I know that I'm thinking about the future and it's worrying me, and those thoughts are a problem, then, as the Buddha says, the first way to remove a distracting thought is to substitute the unhelpful, unwholesome thought with something that is helpful or wholesome. So we substitute the attention, which is in the thought. So the tension is in the head. You take the tension to the body, the belly. So from the mind to the belly. So if basically through mindfulness, we divert the attention from the thought that's causing the anxiety to the body. So if the emotion manifests in the body somewhere, I think for a lot of people, maybe in the belly or maybe in the shoulders. And just go to that area when you know it's actually those thoughts are a problem for you. Go to the belly, go to your body, and just watch your body. And if thoughts are a problem and you want to move your attention away from those thoughts, and there's no sensation in the body that's prominent, simply feel the rise and fall of your chest. Feel the rise and fall of your belly. You're taking your attention from your thoughts, problem thoughts, to your body, or to your breath at the nostrils. So from now on, whenever you've got problems, it doesn't need to be in regards to anxiety, about recurring thoughts that are no longer useful, you simply ground yourself in the body or the breath, which is part of the body. And while you have anxiety, I found that it is so helpful to address this emotion of anxiety while we're walking. So learn to love walking meditation. Feel the sensation of your feet on the ground. Feel the sensation at your ankles. Feel the sensation at your knees. Feel the sensation at your hips. Feel your 10 shoulders and swing them gently to relax them while you're walking. Feel the cool air on your skin as you're walking outside. Feel the sun on your skin, beautiful on a winter's day. If you're walking bare feet on grass, feel the sensation of the grass on the soles of your feet. Love walking meditation. Choose your own pace. Slow, medium, fast. You are the boss. So simply by taking your attention away from your mind, away from the troubling thoughts, and directing your attention, your awareness, your mindfulness to the body. And for those who suffer from anxiety, while you're walking, it's so easy, so enjoyable, because if you actually find yourself in the flow and you're mainly directing your attention to your body, such as the ankles, your knees, or the hips, you are contented and easily satisfied. You are contented. And when you're contented, there's no anxiety. You're not thinking about anything. Your attention is solely on your body, on your ankles, your knees, or your hips as you're moving. It is so beautiful. So I would recommend, love walking meditation. Try all different techniques, including the Mahasi technique too, because that's quite interesting. It's a bit complicated. So try the other ones first, and then try the Mahasi technique of walking. But you don't need to walk slowly, because by walking slowly, it hurts my back when I use that technique. So I just walk at my normal pace. But I would recommend try all different walking meditation methods and techniques to work with, to befriend anxiety. We don't need to suffer unnecessarily because of anxiety anymore. Probably due to, I would say, past lives, I've always been very interested. Since, not always, but I remember since the year 2000, I've been very interested in spirituality. And I questioned and wanted to find meaning in life. So up to that point, a couple of years before, I started to explore spirituality, and used a practice and followed different forms of spirituality. So I followed different forms of spirituality, including Christianity, Krishna consciousness, New Age, and the teachings of the Buddha, early teachings. As a result, since at the latest, I would say, the year 2000, believing in rebirth, believing that I've lived before, was an issue. As a result, I believe that anxiety was probably an issue for me in past lives as well. And that has carried over to this life. And as a result, I would like to work with anxiety as much as I can in this lifetime, so that I can in the future, in future lives, work on other defilements. But you don't need to believe in rebirth or past lives in order to deal with your anxiety now, because the emotion does bother us. It can be debilitating for some of us. And we can see it as a problem or as an opportunity to grow, to learn. Because if we find meaning in our suffering, suffering that is unavoidable, then we are worthy of our suffering, as a psychologist or philosopher in the past has said. I think he was German, I think, or Austrian. So if you find meaning in your suffering and you suffer well, then you're worthy of your suffering. Because in samsara, in the cycle of birth, old age, sickness and death, suffering is unavoidable. But you don't need to add more suffering to suffering that is unavoidable. we can reduce suffering in the form of anxiety. We can reduce suffering caused by anxiety just simply by grounding our attention in the body. Okay, you all look very serious. I think you'll like this one. A frog traced his family tree to Warsaw. He was a tad Polish. So whenever you're anxious, find some jokes that you like. Read them aloud. Because when there's joy in the heart, when there's joy in the mind, it's much easier to befriend anxiety or any problem at all. Any challenging at all. When you're happy, no challenge is too big. When you're happy, you see the challenge as an opportunity to grow, to learn. And when you have enough experience at working with that issue, that challenge, then you can help those around you. That's good karma. Not only good karma, it brings you so much joy. And that joy will help you to see the beauty in every person, the beauty in every situation. Because of my sufferings thus far, when I think of someone like my dad, who died when he was 82, and my mum, she died when she was in the early 60s. So when I think about my mum and the pain she went through, going through chemo and radio because of cancer, I feel her suffering. I feel her pain at that time. I saw her. She had no hair. So when you actually have suffered yourself and have learned from your suffering, then you can't help but feel the suffering in those around you, especially those who you're close to, like my mum, who I loved. She was also a kind person, and she suffered from chemo and radio due to cancer. And my dad, when he died when he was 82, my mum and dad loved each other dearly. They were very good partners. But she died 25 years before he did. Around that anyway, 25 years. So imagine when your partner passes away and you're left behind and you're still relatively young, basically. A partner who you've spent so much time with, so much of your life with, like my mum and dad. And my mum was such a gentle, kind person. My dad was an excellent provider. And he was kind to me as well. So especially for me, when I reflect on the suffering of people who are kind, yet who have had hard lives, who have suffered one way or another, I can't help but sometimes have tears of joy from that connection. That's compassion. Compassion is feeling the suffering of another, but not pitying that person, because pity means there's a distance. With compassion, you are in that person's shoes. You feel for them. You feel their suffering. Because you've gone through deep sufferings yourself. So you know how another person feels when they really suffer. So your heart goes out to them. Tears of joy, that connection. I feel your pain. I feel your pain. And I wish that you are free of suffering. I wish that you are free of suffering because you're such a kind person, yet you suffer so much despite your kindness. So by reflecting on another person's deep suffering and then reflecting on my own suffering, how I have suffered so far in this lifetime, including with anxiety, I have compassion for this heart, this mind, this body. So out of compassion, I will try my best to work through this anxiety so I don't suffer anymore. I don't need to suffer. I don't need to suffer unnecessary. I don't need to suffer unnecessarily anymore. So when you feel the pain of others, when you feel your own pain, you want to try your best to work through any challenges you currently face to the best of your ability. Because you care for this heart, you care for this mind, so you do the best to take care of it. That is right intention. The second factor on the Noble Eightfold Path. The intention of renunciation or letting go. The intention of loving kindness. And the intention of harmlessness, gentleness, or compassion. So three components to right intention. So if you really care about this heart, this mind, whenever we're faced with a challenge in this lifetime, find a way to work through that challenge so that this mind, this heart, does not need to suffer unnecessarily. Because all of us, we have suffered so much. And when you're able to feel this compassion deeply in your loved ones, in yourself, then you can feel the suffering in those you don't like as well. They may not treat you very well, but you know they're suffering. You know they're suffering, and you can extend that wish to those people as well. Because even though sometimes they may not treat you very well, but you know they're suffering deep inside. And you know if they treat you unwell, then they will reap the fruit of that bad karma in this lifetime or in future lives. You don't need to actually hate them. Instead, have compassion for those who don't behave very well, through body, through speech, or through mind. And when you feel that compassion in others, in yourself, because of the sense of connection, there is joy. There is joy. There is joy in loving kindness. There's also joy in compassion as well. Because we feel the suffering of another person, ourselves, but we're not overwhelmed by it. We are not, because there's wisdom. There's wisdom because you know that if that person who actually has suffering, if they want to reduce their suffering, there are ways. They just need to find those ways to reduce their suffering. You can't take their suffering away from them just by wishing it, but you wish that they actually find a way to reduce their suffering. That is compassion with wisdom. As Ajahn Brahm says, compassion without wisdom does not take off. Like a bird with one wing cannot take off as well. You need to, if you feel the pain of another, you need to have wisdom as well. Do not be overwhelmed by their pain. So please work with your own pain first. I encourage every one of us to do the best we can in this lifetime, to work through any challenges. We are so fortunate to have the Dhamma widely and easily accessible to those who look for it. Those who are interested in the Dhamma, it's everywhere. It's free as well. On the internet, here at BSV, at also Newbury Monastery. When you have a challenge like anxiety, talk to a monk here or at Newbury. And there is so much free Dhamma, so many free meditation teachings online, where afterwards you can contact via Zoom and ask the monk or nun or layperson who's teaching any issues you have that bother you, including anxiety. There is help out there. So for those who suffer from anxiety, you don't need to actually suffer so much anymore. All you need to do is look for help and ask for it and then apply the teaching. So ground the attention in the body. Take it away from the mind, ground it in your body, and then you're in this present. And if you're with this present in the body, there will be contentment after a while. No more anxiety. Goodbye. You acknowledge the anxiety, so you're actually not trying to get rid of it. So you have befriended, so acknowledge the anxiety, the pain, and let it go by going straight to your body. No need to actually dwell in those thoughts anymore. So from now on, I encourage you, whenever there's a recurring thought, if it's no longer useful, go straight to the body. And like any skill, if we keep at it, we become more skillful. So learn to love walking meditation first, especially those who suffer from anxiety. Now, it says it's 2020, so that's 8:20, is that right? Yep, so I've been talking for 50 minutes now. Let me see what else I would like to say. So I would like to basically, don't want to overwhelm those who are here as well as those who are at home. So especially for those who suffer from anxiety, please do something about it. The first step is to remember this. Take the attention from the mind to the body. To the body. But for those who are, suffer from anxiety, you can do so while you're walking. That's much easier. Because when you're walking, there's hardly any pain in the body. Whereas when you sit for a while, there may be pain. So please learn and love walking meditation. And in future, when you're ready, you can learn metta meditation and compassion meditation too, to feel the pain of others and then to feel the pain in your own heart and use that suffering to cultivate joy. And with that joy, you can befriend anxiety. And when we have enough experience and skill in working with anxiety, we can share our experience with them. A few days ago, I looked up to see whether there were help groups for those who suffer from anxiety in Melbourne. And there's quite a few. And they usually meet once a month. So you can find a group online and chat to other sufferers of anxiety. So we are so fortunate to live in a country like Australia, where if you do have a challenge, there is help out there. There's so many kind people offer their services for free. So please make good use. We will suffer, but we don't need to suffer unnecessarily from now on. Why was the beach sand upset? Why was the beach sand upset? Because of seaweed. Now, when I was in Albany last time, Albany Monastery over a year ago, there were some Thai supporters who came to support us, Veramudu and I in Albany. And I told them a more complicated joke, like the one I told about the receding hairline. And because one of the Thai ladies, her English wasn't that good, she didn't understand it. So I had to basically tell her a more simple joke. Like the one I just told, basically, about the seaweed. So why was the beach sand upset? Because of seaweed, for those who are not very good with English, which doesn't apply to you here, I'm not. So with that, I would like to answer any questions for those who are here, as well as those who are online at home.
Is there any questions in the audience here?
Thank you for taking my question.
Mm-hmm. No problem. You're welcome. My pleasure.
I had what I call a breakdown. Everything just fell in on top of me. It was a couple of years. And since then, I've just had anxiety 24 hours a day, and I have been to hospital and got horrible, terrible treatments there with, you know, electric shock treatment, and I'm only left with half a brain, you know, so to speak. And I just don't know. It's all too much. The things that you say, I just don't know. It's all too much. So I don't know. It's not a question, really.
How do you feel right now?
Now? I feel sad that I won't be able to do anything that you tell me I should.
So from the talk so far tonight, what have you learnt?
I've learned that a lot of things are possible. That anxiety is possible not to dwell with anxiety. But I seem to have it 24 hours a day.
So does it manifest anywhere in your body?
Yeah, mostly the thoughts here and the belly.
Yeah. Have you thought about feeling the sensation in your belly?
No. But I will try.
Yeah. So that's my first suggestion. So basically, go stretch your belly.
Yeah.
24 hours, basically. Just befriend the sensation in your belly.
Yeah.
Just keep watching it, feeling it.
Yeah.
And give it as much love as you can.
Yeah.
Because that belly is part of you. The mind and the body are one.
Yeah.
So basically, just ground your attention in the body.
I'll try that.
That's right. And how often do you come here?
Oh, twice a week.
That's excellent, because this is such a peaceful, harmonious environment. Come here and be around these kind-hearted people who actually leave such a beautiful energy in this place.
Yeah, it is.
So surround yourself with positive people, kind people, spiritual people.
Yeah.
And by doing so, you will learn to be kinder to yourself. So please, from now on, take your attention to your belly. You can do so while you're sitting, while you're lying, while you're walking. And continue to come to places like this one.
Yep.
Where you'll be taken care of. Where your heart will sing. So even though you have half a brain, that's good enough.
Yep.
Because you never know, you can actually make more brain cells.
Yeah, I know.
And basically make the brain cells you currently have bigger.
Yep.
You can create new pathways.
Yep.
So we work with what we have.
Yep.
So even though you've come through a lot, but you're able to understand me.
Yep.
You're able to come here twice a week.
Yep.
You're able to answer me. You're able to ask me a question really well. You're able to answer extremely well. You're able to be so respectful as well. And you're able and willing to apply the teaching and take the attention from your head to your belly. Well done.
Yeah, I will try.
Well done. If I wasn't a monk, I would hug you.
Thank you.
Please, someone, hug this lady for me later, okay? Please do so.
Thank you.
Well done. You're a trooper. So you are worthy of your suffering. You are worthy of your suffering. Well done to you.
Thank you, I understand.
You are very courageous for basically going through what you've gone through, with such grace. So well done. So please continue to come here. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Venerable. I think we've got a little bit of time for some questions online. So we've got a couple of comments as well. One person had left a comment saying, I sympathize with you. Anxiety kept me paralyzed for years. Recently, I dived into Dharma and meditation seriously, and life changed. Greater understanding and great gratefulness to the Buddha came also. Life is now beautiful. Thank you. And then there was a question that followed this comment. Which type of meditation do you recommend? Breath, metta, body scan. I do a bit of all of them. Is focusing on one best?
It is good to actually learn different types of meditation because I'm not sure about other minds, but with this mind here, it likes variety. So I basically just ask the mind, what would you like to do today? What would you like to pay attention to? I know that with this mind, basically, it likes compassion meditation in the evening before bed. And it likes to basically wander as well. Because we've learned to basically think a lot, most of us, since we were children. As a result, in most of us, the mind tends to wander. So I heard this beautiful analogy, simile, from Venerable Sunyo from Bonyana outside Perth. The analogy, the simile of the dog on a leash. So imagine going to the park with your dog. And you've got, and your dog is on the lead, on the leash. The dog wants to run on the grass around the trees, but you're pulling it. As a result, you're tired from pulling the dog because it wants to go to another direction, and the dog is tired of you for not letting it run to the trees. So the dog is our mind. So I find that with this mind, I need to give permission for it to wander sometimes. So at certain times of the day, I just let this mind wander and think what it wants to. Providing it's not thoughts that would get me in trouble, basically. Not thoughts that are too unwholesome, which would cause a lot of bad karma for me, basically. Yeah. So the dog runs around the trees, it runs on the grass, plays with other dogs, and then when it's had enough, it comes back. So I would encourage most of us to basically to be gentle with this mind, because most minds have suffered so much. We've been so bossy with our minds. We tell it to do so many things, so demanding of our mind, basically. So how about, for a change from now on, start to, like Ajahn Brahm says, give permission for your mind to wander at certain times of the day. Think whatever you want, mind. I tell my mind, you've got free rein. And the mind just wanders And then after a certain time, the mind is happy. It's been able to do what it wants to do. And then I can guide it and encourage the mind to go to the body. Go to the body. We're walking now, so no need to think anymore. Go to the body. Choose where you want to pay attention to. The feet, the ankles, the knees, the joints. Up to you, mind. Just go. But ground mindfulness in the body. So in regards to your question, friend, learn many different techniques and see which technique the mind wants to apply each time. So please be gentle with this mind and offer it variety so that it maintains the interest. Because for the mind to keep its tension, for the mind to be able to continue to be interested in the meditation object, there needs to be joy. And if you use the same technique every session, then the mind will just tire. Become bored. As a result, use variety in your practice and take out the right tool, the right technique at the right time. So the skill of a meditator is in selecting the right technique, the right tool at the right time. I'm not saying I'm a skillful meditator, but from my experience, because I've let the mind wander, I've given the mind more variety than the past, it's much happier. And a happier mind is a more pliant, more pliable mind. One that will listen to your suggestions of when there's anxiety, when there's thoughts that trouble you, you just nudge the mind to take the attention to the body, and it will, because it's received, it's had experience in contentment from watching the body, being with the body. Thank you, friend, for the excellent question.
Have we got any more questions on the floor?
Hold on. Thanks, Bhante, for your talk. It's I've struggled with some anxiety over the past few years myself. One of the ones, and like you, I've just learnt how to manage it. Like my wife was asking me, well, I thought you were over the anxiety, and I said no. I've just learnt to kind of manage it a bit better. But one of the ones that I found more difficult to manage, and it was and it hasn't happened to me for a number of years. And it's a case where like most of the techniques you were describing, you can come back to the body. Like for me, it's the chest. I can go to another place on the body, and I can allow it to subside on its own. It just has no natural course. It just subsides. But there are certain situations, such as this is where it happened, was during a meeting, for instance, right in the middle of me giving some type of report update, and I just go into this full-on panic attack, right? And it's so debilitating that you can't get the words out, right? And for that sort of situation, you know, there's just no ability to kind of just, you know, let it subside, you know. Did you ever have anything like that?
Would you be open to learning some jokes? And so basically, whenever you get that panic attack, just tell some jokes. So basically, the people of the meeting will love you for it. Because meetings can be so boring. Meetings can be so serious. You need to line up the mood. It doesn't matter if you look like a fool. Be yourself. See, if you want to tell a joke, just tell a joke. It doesn't matter what people think. So I would encourage you to try something different. So if you think that you won't be fired from your job, is this at work? Is that where you get paid? Yeah. So basically, in any situation, basically, if you actually make the heart lighter by basically being kind to it, by telling it some silly jokes that it likes, basically, and at the same time telling other people at the same time the silly jokes as well, you're diverting your attention from your mind, where basically there's misery, to your heart, where basically the heart is singing. If you tell it basically the silly jokes, and then basically when Zari being able to recoup the energy, then you can basically when you feel like you're ready, you can just go on with that speech. Yeah, so I would actually, luckily for me, I just need to tell a few jokes and I'm relaxed. Even though I suffer from anxiety, I just need to tell a few jokes that I like and I'm okay. I'm okay. But because I just need to be careful that I don't talk too fast. So thankfully tonight, I haven't stumbled too much over my words, because I have been aware and I've been making an effort to talk slowly, because there's enough time, and if I talk slowly, people will be able to understand more effectively as well, and I'd be more relaxed as well. So we can learn to slow down our speech. And at the same time, if we feel we're nervous, we just pause and lighten up. Life is too serious. Lighten up, especially those who are depressed or anxious. Lighten up. We are alive. We are human. We have opportunity to grow. It doesn't matter what we've gone through. No use complaining, because after a time, no one's going to listen anymore. So we need to do something about it. Stop whinging. Do something about it. You have a challenge? Ask for help. There's so many people who volunteer their services for free. Please find those people. People want to help you because it makes them feel good. If we cannot connect to one another, there is no joy. If we are selfish, we cannot meditate deeply. We cannot enjoy our meditation, because for us to experience joy, we need to connect to others. We need to give. We need to share what we've learned, our experiences. We need to have empathy for others who've gone through what we've gone through, and then sit down with them. Put our arm around them and say, I know how you feel. I've gone through a very similar situation. And then you actually take them to the backyard, the garage. You show them the wheelbarrow. You show them the fork. You show them the shovel. And off you go. Encourage them with boundless energy and kindness to do what you did, to resolve any issue that has arisen, that's a problem for you. Life may be short, life may be long this lifetime. No use complaining if you've got your challenges. If you cannot avoid them, then find a way to work through them. I still have problems with anxiety, so I choose not to allow myself be in situations where I'm likely to be overwhelmed. So that's one of the reasons why I'm going to Albany, because it's a smaller community. That's right. So it's actually for our kindness for this heart as well. Yeah, so if you can change your physical conditions, environment, then it does help. But if you can't, then there are other ways to deal with anxiety or any challenges in your life. Thank you for sharing that, Sri Juth, as well. I really meant that because I didn't realize you suffer from anxiety as well. Because I would say that maybe around 10%, I think, of the population suffers from anxiety time to time. And for a person to be diagnosed as with a anxiety as a disorder, not just as an emotion, basically, but as a disorder, then you need to have it every day for 6 months. So I think, thankfully, most of us don't have anxiety every day. It's only sometimes, basically. Yeah, so I've had it since I was a teenager. And thankfully, because I love walking meditation now, it's such a lifesaver for me, basically. And through walking meditation, my mindfulness is much better now. It's much better now. As a result, I've got more contentment, and also it helps me when I sit as well. Because when I sit, basically, my posture is not the best because I've got scoliosis. So if I sit for too long, my left side tends to hurt. So that's why I love walking meditation. But also because of the anxiety and reflecting on those who actually have gone through difficult times, like my parents and other people as well. Through compassion meditation, that has helped me to connect to other people. As a result, that gives me a lot of joy. And when we meditate, especially when we're sitting down, basically, we need joy, even at the start. So bring some joy to the meditation cushion as well. So if you are really serious about seeing meditation, try to bring joy to the cushion first. So walk first and then get the contentment and then you can sit down. You don't need to start from scratch and cultivate joy on the cushion. Get the contentment first while you're walking and then sit down. And then if you want more joy, you reflect on, reflect on someone who's gone through a difficult time, and especially someone who's kind. And then if you actually feel that compassion for them, basically, then there may be some tears of joy. And while that joy, basically, is so, it's much easier to watch the breath. So thank you for that question once more, because by sharing, you've helped me to reflect on what I've learned so far and also to share some more.
Thank you, Bhante. I think we will leave it there
yes,
for tonight.
Yes, so because I love chanting, please indulge me, okay? I would like to chant the Metta Sutta in English. This is what is done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, content and easily satisfied, not busy with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they're weak or strong or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living in far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart you want cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to any views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desire, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.